Exactly, yeah. Right. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Breaking Point podcast. Today, we're here with Jordan Blake. And
yep.
This Jordan is someone who I just DM'd off Instagram, and he's very kindly got back to me. And Jordan has got he's got loads of little things going on. So I got in contact with the from the photography perspective, I suppose. But after looking at your accounts and all the different things you've got going on, you're obviously quite a versatile person. You've got your fingers in a lot of different pies. So give the people a little bit of a, tell them, I don't know, what you think is the most important aspect of yourself or things to tell them if you think or.
Yeah. So I would say the most important aspect, which I try to integrate into everything else that I do as well, is just to be myself. And I think just through learning how to be myself and what that looks like, it makes it a lot easier when I'm doing other things to show up in the same kind of way. So with the like photography, I like music, I like the clothing stuff I'm trying to do, I like the enterprise stuff, it's always going to have the element of me to it. So it's not like I'm doing much, like a lot of things differently, but it's just doing the same thing in different environments.
Okay. Oh, that's a cool. I like that. You are sort of taking your essence and putting it into different aspects of your interests and trying
to keep
the theme of you consistent. So
yeah.
What have you got? You've got your music.
Yeah. Photography. I'm working on a social enterprise at the moment called Motivate London, which I kind of hope to aim to build my own platform first and then use that platform to help other people build their own platforms. And then the whole concept behind that is just the kind of concept of individuality. So kind of helping people find what they're supposed to do, like what they actually enjoy doing and not what society dictates that they should be doing based on like their environment or like the kind of labels placed on them kind of thing.
And why are you in the music? Are you a producer or are you a rapper? What is it that you
do? A rapper.
You're a rapper. Okay.
Yeah, I rap.
So I listened to your track. I can't remember what it was called, but I remember the thumbnail. Tribe. Like, yes, it was. Yeah, the Tribe. Yeah, yeah. I like that. I like the.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, that was good. So I suppose this is quite a bit of a weird. This is a new sort of podcast for me because you don't have like one thing that you're at, one industry that you're really sort of going in, and you've got a specific, you're more versatile. So I suppose what should we talk about? What is your, when you do photography, what is your style of photography?
With photography, I'll say where I'm still pretty new to it. So I've been doing it about 2 years now. I do like street photography, learning to do that more, like studio shoots. But I enjoy capturing very like natural moments. So whether it's like a picnic and everyone's just enjoying themselves or like just seeing people like interaction with each other. So I feel like there's still like always going to be that essence that I can get that from. Whether it's a studio shoot or whether it's like a wedding or like a live event or something like that, there's always going to be that essence of that authenticity that I like to capture.
What is it about music that calls to you?
So where growing up, I was like a very quiet child. I think music in a sense kind of gives me like a voice, but also at the same time, it's like a journal as well. So I could hear like old songs and then kind of remember like where I was at the time. And the same like when I hear other people's songs as well, it's like you'll hear a song that you didn't hear for ages and it kind of takes you back to that time. And I was in the car listening to this. Or I was with my friends doing this when I last heard this. So I think that aspect of music where it's like, it's not necessarily always about the song, but it's like what was happening during that time when you hear that song as well. That like plays a big part into like what draws you to music and seeing what it can do to people. Well, that for people,
that is, Yeah, that's a great point, a great thing about music. It's like a time stamp or a stamp in time, isn't it? And when you listen to it, it brings you back. And I suppose it's like a passport. I suppose movies are a bit more like this, but music is like it to some degree. Every time you watch a movie, I find you can take something new from it. As you get older, especially a good movie. And a song, less than a movie to some degree, just because of the medium, but a good song is a bit like that as well. Extract more information and sort of wisdom.
Yes.
Maybe wisdom's not the right word with a song. Yeah. Right. What is that? Is that a clock behind you?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, so some are written in words and some are written in letters. Very good. Right. Very good. Abstract. Yeah. So you said a minute ago that you were quite an introverted, quiet child. What was your childhood like? And have you always been interested in the arts, or is it quite a new thing?
I would say, so growing up, I had 5 siblings. So me being the youngest one, it's like my siblings always used to bully me anyway. But we've always had our fun growing up, and I could just make games out of anything. So even now, like, we're still like very much like best friends anyway. In terms of the arts, I would say I was probably like interested in it, but not knowing it. Because I feel growing up, it was always around us, so it's not something I necessarily noticed until I started writing myself, and then thinking, oh, it's actually like everywhere. I think that came more into like perspective once I started doing photography as well, and then seeing how everything kind of connects anyway. Because like, even now you're talking about movies, there's always going to be like music playing as well, or there's going to be like a videographer or photographer that has some part to play in whether it's like trailers or posters or anything like that. So when you kind of look at the whole picture, it's like art is always going to be around us, and we're all creatives in our own way. Just all creatives in our own way, really.
Why did you set up that page? What drove you to set up that page?
So I would say, I think it's mainly during my time through like uni. Well, like I feel like I was depressed because I had like a lot of low moments, but it's not stuff I wanted to put out onto my main page. So then I made that page so that way I had like a way to like vent and kind of just keep it hidden. And then through time, I think through like posting it and writing about it, it made me think a lot more about what it was I was feeling. So it helped the whole like self-reflection phase a lot easier because it was visual. And then looking back at it, it allowed me to then think, okay, so all these things are happening, but what am I doing in these situations to allow it to happen? And then once I had that aspect of it, it made it a lot easier to kind of control the environments I allow myself to be in. And then through that, it's kind of like I was able to kind of coach myself to know what are like toxic environments or environments I don't necessarily want to be in. And I think through time, so I think go like back to the beginning, it's a lot darker than it is now. And I think just even like when I look back at it, it kind of reminds me that I'm on like a good journey.
It's that's really true. As you brought up the word journal afterward in the sense of your song lyrics, but it's kind of the same thing. It's like a catalog of your previous thoughts and sort of emotions and feelings, and then you can look back in hindsight and go, oh yeah, this is how I was feeling. Because age is, you know, as we get older, I think most of us, not all the time, but a lot of people become less neurotic as they get older. Their temperament sort of softens a bit, which is a good thing, to be fair. Stabilizes a bit, which is a really good thing. So, what sort of things got you in a low mood when you were at uni? I mean, obviously uni's pretty hard environment in the first place, understandably.
I think without realizing it. But like where I went to Swansea and growing up in like Shoreditch, back when I was Ross, it was like a completely different environment. And then navigating through the same kind of ways kind of led to a lot more drama than I needed to be. So for a while, I felt, I wouldn't say out of place, but I felt like I didn't belong there in a sense. And then like things like just like financial literacy, like emotional intelligence that I was lacking. So it always felt like I was running at a deficit. And then it's like, where there's no one, I feel like being at that age, it was hard to have this kind of conversation with the people I was around at the time, because no one else was really like thinking about it or talking about these things, which were the cause of how I was feeling. So I think just, it was like a lot of little things that built up to create something else, like a cocktail of like different like factors. And then I think through that, it just kind of made me shut off to like the world. And like when you just, when you have your own thoughts that you're not sharing, they become a lot bigger in your head than it is, than once you say it. So I think it was just over time.
Yeah, it's if especially if you've got quite an introverted temperament, which you obviously you admitted to at the beginning, which that can have its great strengths, but it can also have its downfalls as well, which is that thoughts and stuff can just ferment and just sort of breed inside your head and grow and grow and grow, and you can become plagued by your own thoughts. Whereas if you're, and also introversion is often, extroversion from a personality perspective is basically just positive emotion. So when people feel extroverted, they basically just feel happy. If there's another way, it's kind of another way of saying happy. Because when you're feeling down, you know, no one goes out to a nightclub when they're feeling down. I mean, they might do in spite of them feeling down. as a sort of coping mechanism, but they're not being like vibrant. Yeah, exactly. So exactly, when you feel down and depressed, you tend to go in on yourself anyway. So which is quite often a bad feedback loop, because you become more withdrawn, and then you get more anxious, and then you become more withdrawn, and then you get more anxious, and then it just sort of goes on and on and on. Spiral. It's just a spiral, yeah. So it gets pretty difficult. So it can be hard. But would you say that your creative streak is a great antidote to that sort of self judging thought processes and patterns that you have? Sometimes have.
I would say it took a while to get to the point where it is now. But I think initially, I still had like a very strong like victim complex. So me like writing songs before was more of a way to reinforce my own thoughts. Because I think even like with songs, the more you hear it on repeat, the more it kind of like resonates with you. So it's like,
yeah,
I mean, feeling bad about myself and then writing songs about feeling bad at myself, then listen to the songs about feeling bad at myself, made me feel like I had to feel like bad about myself, really. But then it's like, it's just, what do they say about like the stories you tell yourself without the ones that come true or something like that? So it's like, if I want to get out of the cycle, then I had to change my way of thinking or like the way I viewed myself in order to help myself get out of it.
Yeah, definitely. How did you change the way you were thinking?
So I think that's where the Blake for Thought page kind of helped a lot with that. And one of my friends that I was finally able to kind of talk about once they heard a few of my songs and then open up the conversation about it. And then it kind of forced me to try and do things differently, or like by through them questioning my actions, then made me realize that it was actually me putting myself in these situations. So then once I had that awareness of it, it helped me navigate a little bit better. And then it just kind of opened up the like the darkness a little bit, see like a little bit of light. And then I kind of focus towards that to then see like what else was around me, kind of thing.
That's really powerful. That's really handy and helpful that you had a friend that you could speak to and had the insight to see. And that's a really good way of putting it with the light and the tunnel. So all you need is a tiny little bit of light to have something to aim towards and to have something to show you that you're in the darkness, I suppose. Because if there's no light, then you're not in darkness, are you? You're just, you know, there's no light without dark. You're just in what you assume is normality. So that's really hard. When you say you had a bit of a victim complex, in what sense? Within what you're comfortable.
That's fine. Safe space. I would say that with a victim complex, it was like, I don't know if it was stubbornness or what, but I refused to take responsibility or like accountability for anything that I was doing that allowed me to be in those situations. And I always just thought that all these things are happening to me. And then I just kind of left it at that. But I never questioned why it was happening. So I think just going through that mentality is that things will only get worse because you start becoming defensive to a lot more stimulus that you wouldn't necessarily need to be defensive about. If you said, okay, you know what?
Yeah.
I did this, so I could understand why this happened, rather than, oh, I was just walking and this happened to me kind of thing. So, yeah, same that sense.
Yeah. If you struggle with taking responsibility, I mean, it's a complicated matter, I suppose, because there's an element of randomness to life. And, you know, we're all thrown in, as in like thrown into these lives that we're given. And there's a lot that we can't, there's some things that we can't change, but there's a thing in psychology, I think, called locus of control.
Yeah.
Which is like you've got like an internal and an external. And those that have an internal, meaning that they believe that they have a lot of control over their lives, tend to be happier than those that have an external opinion, because they basically assume that life is coming at them. And then the internal people think, or the extremes, they think that they're going towards life. And, you know, it's a really helpful... the life is in their control. And it's one of the reasons why my room right now is so, why my room is always so tidy, because I believe in, especially if you struggle with mental health and stuff, which I do, hence why, or I have done in the past to a greater degree, which is why I'm doing this, obviously. I believe in minimizing the level of complexity in your life as much as you can. And, you know, and keeping things tidy is one way of doing that, and keeping on top of things is one way of doing that. And yeah, so that's really good that you came to that conclusion, that taking accountability for your actions, and also it's liberating, that is, because, you know, people think that it's oppressive to, you know, I don't want to get political, but the notion of being a victim is a tricky one in some degree, because obviously sometimes people are very very correctly seen as victims because they have been truly perpetrated against or shaken. But other times, but in some ways it isn't always helpful to see yourself as a victim, because it means that you have less control. And control is what we're all kind of looking for, really, because control means power. Not power, power is the wrong word, but control means autonomy over yourself and life. But like I said, it's all very complicated, these things, and I can't hit every point there is to hit in a little 2-second, 2-minute part. But anyway, let's go back to you, because I've spoken for a while. What would you say is at your core as a person, which therefore you're trying to push out onto your art? If you strip everything away, do you think you have a core?
Yeah. And it's funny you say that, because I think my core has always been to help people. But I think what got to me in the past was that I was trying to help people, but at the same time, I was like using all my resources to do it. Whereas now I'm learning how to like help people within my capability or like my capacity to help people. Yeah. So I felt like a lot of the times before I would help someone, and then it meant that I was at a loss for something that was never coming back. So yeah, I've always had like people's best interests in mind, same like through like music, or like photography, or like with the Motivate London like enterprise. The core has always been helping people kind of like find themselves. And I think the best way that I've learned to kind of do that is to become vulnerable myself. Because once people could see who you are as a person, it then makes it easier for them to have a conversation. So I always try to like be as naked as I can, so to speak, with how I present myself. So that no matter what the question is, I'll answer it as me as I can.
Honestly. As genuine as you can. That's so powerful. We've lost honesty in our society an awful lot nowadays, and I think there's so many lies spread around, and it's across all sorts of platforms, and it's quite dangerous. And I think, you know, the truth will set you free, but it will probably put you through the ringer before it sets you free, but ultimately it will set you free in the end. And I think that's really an important aspect to encourage people to go down.
I think with that as well, there's like so much anxiety with people like being themselves, and it's like once you're yourself, it's easier to decide what kind of environment you need to be around. Because if you lose people for being yourself, then you shouldn't be around them in the first place. But there are a lot of people, I think, that keep up and act that's not necessarily them. So just to be around the people that they want, that they're currently around almost. And I think over time, that just kind of like drains you and like picks away at you to the point that you lose your identity. And I think that once you reach that point, I think that's where like depression hits, because you're not yourself really, and you kind of lose that core kind of thing.
Absolutely, I mean that's one of the most common things. It probably is the most common thing that you hear on like studies about people on their deathbed and just before they're about to die and stuff. They always say, you know, it's like the number one thing, I wish I'd lived a life that was more genuine to me. So absolutely. And I think going back to the caring about what people think, there's a quote that I absolutely love, which is, when you're 20, you care what everyone thinks. When you're 40, you stop caring what everyone thinks. And when you're 60, you realize that no one cared in the first place. And I think that's really true, actually. And I think if you've been exposed to quite a lot of mental pain and sort of internal
trouble.
I mean, maybe not, no, not trauma. That's a bit extreme. I mean, probably trauma as well, but I won't say that because I don't know enough about that. But I just mean internal turmoil and, you know, overthinking and analysis. I think you reach that conclusion a bit quicker than maybe other people do. Maybe not. Maybe it's just a case of, you understand what I mean? You reach the conclusion that people didn't care in the first place a little bit quicker just because of your experiences and your tendency to overthink things. Motivate London. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So what's that going to look like? Is that going to be a website? Is it going to be a Instagram page?
So it has an Instagram page, and we're on the website at the moment. And then with that, I want to have like a blog page on it. So it kind of ties in at the Blake for Thought, the photography side of it as well. So I do the editorial, like photography, like concepts, and kind of go into more details about certain subjects. The blog page, I kind of want to invite other people on to kind of share their story and kind of talk about who they are as a person, or like what they've the challenges they've been through, or like the lessons that they've learned, kind of thing. Because I think through my day job, I learned how beneficial having like a mentor could be. So, and that's just someone sharing their experience and kind of making you have like a shortcut to get to the same stage where they're at. And I don't think that should just be limited to a professional sense. So it's like once you could able to transfer that and give people that life advice and that life skills, because people would resonate at different levels anyway. So all it takes is one person to say, oh yeah, this was my journey and this is what I went through, but this is how I overcame it. It would have taken someone with the same journey or like going through the same thing to feel, oh, you know what, I never thought about that. And once you're able to like plant one seed, it then opened the eyes to like what else they could be around. So it's the same kind of like idea with like opening the darkness and seeing like a little bit of light to it. So I think if you're able to do that for that one person and they're able to do it for like another person, it makes like the whole self-development journey a lot more easier, a lot more fulfilling.
Yeah, you could build like a network of people who are learning from one another. And that's really cool. I like that. Let's talk a little bit about your childhood a bit more. What was it like growing up in London and everything to do with that?
So I would say growing up in London, looking back, was pretty terrifying, but to the point. But where it was things happening every day that you become accustomed to it, and where that's your normal, it's like you get used to like living in with anxiety and not knowing that's what it is. Until something really big happens and you think, okay, this is anxiety. I'd say like
that's good.
Hackney or even Shoreditch when I was growing up, there'll be like gangs on like every street. And coming, going to and from school, you never knew what was going to happen, or like you'll get to school the next day and think, oh, this person got robbed, or oh, this person got stabbed. And it's like you're always in the back of your mind, you're always wondering if it's ever going to happen to you. So I think I've been like robbed like two or three times. I just going to and from school, going to like basketball matches, like we'll see groups of people and then they'll start on us, kind of thing. So it's like you're always in a constant like fight or flight like mode, in a sense, just from like leaving your house. So I think with that, it made me like go out intentionally. Like, okay, I'm going out because I need to go to basketball training or I need to go to school. And even then, it's like, what's the safest way I could get there? So I think that's part of like where the overthinking came from, because you had to think about all the possibilities that could happen just to get to where you're going. So that planning a journey was a lot more intensive.
That's a really good point. Yeah. That's a really good, that's very true. Yeah. You had to be, far more on your tippy toes. I don't know. You had to be far more aware and conscious of possibilities than say I probably was growing up where I grew up. So yeah, that's true. And what is it? What's London like? What's living in London like now?
I think you still have like clusters, but I think ever since the Olympics happened and it's become like more gentrified, it's a lot more diverse. I feel safe in London. But then it's funny because a lot of people in Shoreditch now are international. So everyone that I've kind of knew growing up are no longer here. So that sense of like culture or like belonging is like slowly fading away as well. And it's like, so it has its pros and cons, but London's lost the essence that I knew of it.
What do you think the benefit of being true to yourself is? You've kind of brushed on it a little bit.
So I think even growing up, just being around my family, I could see that how we're not as authentic as we need to be, or like, as genuine as we need to be with each other to have like healthy conversations. And I think the benefit of people being themselves is that no one has to play mind games, or that like, everyone knows where they stand. So even just communicating is a lot more easier, where you don't have to think how they're going to react to something, because you know who they are and you know how they think about things. So I think just getting people to own that essence of themselves, it would just make life a lot more easier, a lot more pleasant. And they could just go to things, or you could even say no to not going to things and not feel guilty or feeling like you have to kind of go to it kind of thing. And then once people have that much like mind space more available, like everything just flows a lot more easily, I'd say.
I like that word. I like that phrase. Everything flows a lot easier. Yeah. If you take away the barriers and the constraints that we have around us and who we are, everything will flow a lot more easier. Because that's kind of what,
yeah,
by definition, it will, I suppose. And our human, I don't know, spirit or sort of our true identity,
yeah,
can flourish. Essence, yeah, a good word, yeah. It's a good point.
Yeah, I think you touched on that before as well. We was talking about we're just thrown into this world. And one way that I kind of saw it is like, yeah, we're thrown into this world and we have all these labels attached to us for the minute we're born. And then we're taught how to fit into those labels. But where we didn't get a choice in that, it's like we're always going to be going against the grain, trying to do what people think we should be doing or that are expected of us. So I don't know if you saw that on my page. So during the whole Live Matters protest, Britney Spears reposted one of my pictures. And then that kind of went viral. Yeah. Very random. And that went viral.
That's great.
But then it kind of started, it caused me to have like a lot of conversations. And I think that was the biggest factor which changed my way of thinking. Because so many people came to me with their reality and kind of projected it onto like what I was saying. But then it's like once we was able to have conversations about it, it's like we just had our own experiences growing up. And I think being able to meet eye to eye in those conversations meant that we had to unlearn that things we were taught. And I think when that happens, like people get defensive immediately because like, no, I'm not wrong. This is what I always taught. And I think that's a lot. That's a big change for people to handle that. So I think just going through that opened my eyes a lot more and made me a lot more receptive to how other people that perceive me or like see life as well.
So what sort of things were they saying? What were you discussing?
So there's a picture of me sitting at the back of the bus saying that white people have generational wealth, black people have generational trauma. And then if I wear such a blanket statement that it can mean so many different things. And all I meant with that statement was that historically, so like white people had the chance to build wealth, buy a house and things like that. Whereas we were like during that Windrush and even through slavery, we came to this place or like we were brought into the system that were fundamentally meant to like hold us down or like keep us in the roles that we were supposed to be then kind of thing. So I think have you heard of epigenetics? So it's like traumas that pass down through generations. Where society is moving so fast, but the lessons we're taught from our parents and our grandparents are still the same. There's things that I learned that my great grand was probably going through that are no longer relevant. And I'm still trying to apply those lessons to the society now, where it's no longer relevant in that sense. So it's like we have a lot to overcome in order to just like get over that anxiety or the traumas or like the way that we perceive life, because we're still going off of old lessons kind of thing. And I think through having that conversation, like many conversations, like it just really highlighted how we're all at different levels of understanding of our history and like what our lives were like and our experiences were. So it kind of helped like motivate London in a sense, find out what was the actual issue. And it's like, we're all fighting for the titles that were given to us when it's nothing to do with us.
That's very, very well said, fair play. So, what is your opinion on, because the left side of politics play a lot of identity politics, which is they categorize people based on their demographics, and they sort of reduce them to you're black, you're white, you're straight, you're gay, you're a man, you're a woman, and there's a void and a lacking of individuality there, but perceiving someone through the lens of the individual.
Yeah.
What's your opinion on that? Because obviously those things are important, but for me personally, I always like to look at people as an individual rather than a list of their demographical positions. Yeah.
So,
did you get that?
Yeah. So with that, I'd say that I think just how the country had run and the system that need to be in place for a functioning society, there always need to be like a higher, middle, and lower class. So, like back in the days, racism is what was used. So that even more recently, like racism was like what was used to kind of hold people down. But then when you break racism down, it seems more of like the social class. So where historically black people weren't wealthy, all the stereotypes of like poor people were associated with black people because of like their social class. And now where that's becoming less irrelevant, but we still have the same stereotypes, that's where I think is that racism is still a thing, because we still get judged from like our old like wealth class, but it's still just a way of like breaking, just separating people and like segregating them. I think when people are segregated, it's a lot easier to control. And I think where not as many people have the kind of conversations that like me and you are having now, it's harder to kind of see that those walls or that those barriers don't actually exist, but it was just like man-made or like you're taught to believe that they exist. And the minute, so like for example, when I went to Swansea, my perception of it was that I'll get there and everyone will be racist because I'll be the only black guy there. And I get there and everyone like friendly and was like, oh, hey, UK, oh, how about this? And they're trying to help me out and help me do things. And that threw me off because I went over there with my defenses up, and then to see that made me realize that it's just the environment I was in that made me believe the world was like this kind of thing. I don't know if you watch anime, but have you ever seen Attack on Titan?
I've heard of it, but I haven't watched
it. Yeah. And I think that anime, because for like about 100 years, they're living inside this like wall. And they're taught that there's nothing out there. And if you go out there, you'll be eaten by like these giants. And eventually they get out there and really there's like a whole other world that's not written in any books, anything like that. And I think that's how society is now. It's a lot like now, where it's like, we're taught that if we go outside or go against the grain, there's nothing but danger that awaits us. And then just to actually go there and like go out there and still be okay, it's like very like, what do you say, revolutionary? It changes your mind, your
perception. Revolutionary, yeah, as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely. 100%. And just, I've always, in my more, yes, carry on.
I was going to say, so it's just finding a way to get people to that point to go and explore. It's like when people say that you should go skydiving and just get over that perception that you have of it. I think it's the same kind of thing. But yeah.
Yeah, it's part of the reason why this podcast is called The Breaking Point Podcast, because I believe that beyond that breaking point is, something greater than we understand. And in my more conspiratorial moments, going back to what you just said a minute ago about how these barriers that are around us, I often wonder that the labels that we have put on us and the perceived battle between these labels and demographics is actually just a distraction technique from people above us to keep us occupied and not notice on the actual oppression that goes on in society nowadays, like, or another form of oppression, like the food that we eat and the drugs that we take and the chemicals we're exposed to. And I don't know, in my more conspiratorial moments, I wonder that, not that I'm not reducing at all any of the other oppressions, but I just wonder if, because I think, did you said It's the notion of we're fed to believe that out there are dragons and demons and monsters, right. But actually it's not. It's similar to that, yeah.
Can I watch a documentary, a film on Netflix called The Eclipse of Tyrant. And in that film, it's like everyone had their role to play. So it was like a drug dealer, like a prostitute. And it's like they all had their role to play in holding that area like to a certain thing. So they kind of fed people and held them down pretty much. So then that's where now drug users and everything came down. So it stopped people from progressing.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot like where society is at now, where like through titles and labels and then stigmas against those titles and labels, it stops people reaching out or going out of their comfort zone to find new areas. So I think I'd wait pretty much just like a social CV, really. And it's like, okay, these are your qualifications. This is what you can do, kind of thing. But
that's a great way of putting it. Great phrase, social CV, yeah. Your social CV. Your privilege and victim CV as well, yeah.
Yeah.
In some ways, yeah. Right. I like it, very good.
Your entitlements and your benefits.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Right, I think that is probably a good place to stop. Because, yes, so it was a great conversation. Right, great, brilliant. Thank you, everyone, for watching. Thank you, Jordan, for coming on. I hope you had a good time. I certainly have. You've taught me a lot. You've opened my eyes to multiple things. So I've really enjoyed your refreshing take on things. So fair play to you. And I'll see you on the next one, guys. Peace.